This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Pedlin Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's March 21st, 2018. Welcome. Hey, it's spring. It's spring.
It is at that.
Somewhere in the world, it is spring. Yeah. Maybe not quite here, but...
It's spring here.
Yeah, I know, but it's cold.
The equinox was 12:15 p.m. on Tuesday, yesterday.
Hmm. Well... Good for it.
You could balance an egg.
But you couldn't tell by the weather.
No.
Anyway, welcome to Bicycle Talk this week with my co-host, the lovely Fran Storch.
Hello.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can call us or text us right now at 860-486-9487. Or you can email me at bicycletalk@gmail.com. You can also visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you'd like to contribute to the show or be on as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk@gmail.com. So many, many ways of getting a hold of us here at Bicycle Talk. If you are listening to us live right now, it's 11 o'clock on Wednesday morning. Great. You can call us right away. If not, contact me later. Ron's rant of the week. Okay, I got to bring it up. It's out there. It's a problem. Driverless cars. Really? Really? Do we really need these things? An Arizona woman was killed. A pedestrian walking her bicycle across the street was killed by an Uber car. Just recently, it's in the news, and of course, Uber has have stopped all driverless car activity at this time. By the way, there was an attendant in the car when the car killed the woman. So I don't think we're ready for this, folks. We can't even get drivers who drive cars who are supposed to be paying attention to pay attention. So why are we going down this road? Why are we going there? Why don't we change the base problem with the motorized vehicle? And I know the problem is human, and how do you change that? Well, that's a darn good question. There's an awful lot we can talk about here. But anyway, I think that going to a driverless car because people are inattentive is probably not such a great idea, since the driverless cars are also inattentive. So there's some things out here that are worthy of discussion because of this. And
so the drivers of this car are supposed to have technology that it should have seen the woman crossing the road with the bicycle?
Well, there's where the discussion comes in. And so if we go to the discussion on this and we take a look at things like the League of American Bicyclists. They're making a very, very strong push on this. And they say, take action to require automated vehicles to see bicyclists and pedestrians. All right? Because on Sunday night, the vehicle was operated by Uber hit and killed a pedestrian in Tempe, Arizona, as she was walking her bicycle across the street. With the details of the crash still forthcoming, the League of American Bicyclists is concerned that these vehicles are being deployed without having to first prove their ability to recognize and respond to people biking and walking in our streets. This tragedy marks the first time a bicyclist or a pedestrian has been killed by an automated vehicle in the United States. However, the recent articles in IEEE Spectrum and Slate magazine report that detecting bicycles is one of the most difficult problems automated driving system technology faces.
For real?
And is testing for bicyclists. Then the testing for bicyclists lags behind other ADS technology tests. This tragedy shows that not all manufacturers' technology is ready to be tested in communities. This goes like right out there with like testing a drug that has not been tested.
Right.
And just putting it into human use and saying, well, let's see what the consequences are.
Before the clinical trials are complete.
Right.
Sure.
Exactly. So, you know.
That's potentially deadly.
Why don't we just teach people how to drive their cars better instead? And you know, if I were king, and, you know, I have a whole list of, Ron has a whole list of if I were kings. But if I were king, I would, I'd have a requirement for people to, when they go to get their license renewed, they need to just go through a quick test. You know, even if it's just an online test, so they can at least see the questions in front of them to remind them of what you're supposed to be doing when you're driving your car. I went online to, I found one of those tests, and I will eventually post this in the future. But I found a test, and I failed three or four of the questions on a test that was out there to, you know, to, it was like a pretest for your driver's license. And there were 20, 25 questions for the state of Connecticut. And I failed three of the questions on the test. So here I am. I've been driving since I was 16 years of age. I am far from 16 years of age. I have not been required to take another test. And yet when I did take this test voluntarily, I did miss some of the answers to the questions. So, you know, laws change. Things change. People forget. You forget how to drive your car. And, you know, maybe it's time to learn. In addition to that, when you are taking a test like that, it also is an action that is, you know, it's required for riding your bicycle on the road, too, because you are technically a vehicle in the state of Connecticut. So these are things to be aware of, and other states, too. So the league right now is making a push right now, and this is a pretty good idea. So you want to please contact your senators and ask them to require automated vehicles to pass a vision test. Get this, a vision test for your automated vehicle, and prove that they can detect and respond to all users of our roadways, including bicyclists and pedestrians. So folks, if you're out there and you like to take a little action, you want to be part of bicycle advocacy and you do things right and keep us all safer out there, Let's get on this driverless vehicle thing, because I'm not sold on them yet. I'm sorry. I think there's a problem here. I think it needs to be addressed. And the best way to address this is to get a hold of your senators and ask them to require that automated vehicles pass a vision test. Nothing worse than a blind automated car, huh? So that's Ron's Rant of the Week. If you have discussion on that, you would like to talk more about it, you can certainly call us, because right now we are live. If you are listening to this on podcast, you can contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com or on Facebook. The additional discussion is also on Facebook. So please post away and we'll see what it is. Next thing on my list, on a positive side, the New York Times... Thank you, Tony, by the way, for sending this over to me. The New York Times has an article about how exercise can keep aging muscles and immune systems young. This is kind of, you know, for those of us in the world of health and fitness and exercise, which Fran and I are totally immersed in due to our careers and what we do, and are also our love of cycling, it's kind of what we call at the house a DUH moment. But and how is that? How's that said, Fran?
Duh.
Yeah, right. And so, but the point is, yay New York Times, because New York Times obviously has a large readership, and it is you know, focusing on this. So on a positive side, remember, you know, remaining physically active as we grow older could help keep our muscles and our immune systems robust, according to two new inspiring studies of older recreational cyclists. I am not calling myself that yet, but I think I am.
You're an older recreational. I'm an older recreational cyclist. Makes you an ancient recreational cyclist.
We're in the middle of our lives. We're not at the end yet.
Sure.
Yeah, I'll listen to you. Together, the experiments add to grow evidence that some of our assumptions about aging may be outdated, and we might have more control over the process than we think. So this is a good little article. You might want to check it out. It was it prompted a group of British scientists to wonder whether our beliefs about what is normal and inevitable with our physical aging might be limited or incorrect, and in particular, whether we might be ignoring the role of exercise. How about that? So, yay, New York Times. Good thing. Good discussion.
I have a lot of patients who ignore the role of exercise. I'm always begging them to stop ignoring the role of exercise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and is this like the two pills that people don't want to take, the two pills in America that people don't want to take?
So your idea of the two pills would be exercise and healthy diet?
That's correct.
Well, one of the pills is also rest.
Well, then there's three pills.
Yeah.
Mm.
Right.
Wow. Now I'm going to have to get one of those boxes that has all the little sections for the different pills.
Yeah. I mean, it's really difficult because, you know, I'm just always trying to find ways to help people to get there, to get started, and to not be judgmental and to be motivating. So you don't want to shame people into doing anything because they won't listen to you if you do that. And, you know, you just want to remind people, you have to give them solutions that are workable in the lives that they have. If they're not, and it takes, you know, several weeks to build a habit. It's mm-hmm. like at least 3 weeks to build a habit.
Right.
So people have to want to do it, and they have to do something that's workable.
Right.
But it's true. Exercise makes so much difference. I mean, it makes complete sense to me that you would look like you were not aging as much because, I mean, there's so many basic things that exercise does for you.
So, you know, how many times do you talk to people and, of course, they find out that you ride a bike?
Yeah.
And what are the words that come out of their mouth, which just drives me nuts, are, I used to love to ride my bike.
Yeah. Used to.
Used to. Right.
Yeah.
Used to. Used to.
That's how we say in New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
Used
to. Used to.
It's one word.
Got it. So you can love it again.
Yeah.
You know,
you
it's okay. It's okay. You didn't have a divorce from it. All right. It wasn't nasty. It didn't cost you a fortune. It didn't, you know, put you in a bad place. You can always go back and ride your bike.
Yeah.
Right? So, one last little piece on this. So, for the inaugural study of the riders, which was published in 2014, the scientists measured a broad range of cyclists' physical and cognitive abilities compared to those of the sedentary older people and much younger men and women. The cyclists proved to have reflexes and memories. These are of older cyclists, you know, like us. The cyclists proved to have reflexes and memories, balance, and metabolic profiles that more closely resembled those of 30-year-olds than of the sedentary older group.
We're like 30-year-olds?
Hey, 60 is the new 30, baby.
What 30-year-olds? Because 30-year-old cyclists, we got nothing on them.
No.
So are you talking your average? What kind of 30-year-olds are they comparing? Are they comparing it to 30-year-olds who are now like playing video games and are sedentary?
Let's take a look at some of those 30-year-olds that are out there right now.
That's what they're talking
We're
about.
We're taking an average.
Because 30 is not so the, oh boy.
Right. So even if you're, you know, if you're, this is pretty funny. So that means that because I ride my bike and I stay physically active, that I am very close to being at the same health and fitness level of my son.
Wow. Except that your son's pretty fit.
Yeah, he is fit. Now, you know, the tip of the cycling cap to Greg. Because he's 28 years old and he lives in a city and he doesn't own a car. So his mode of transportation is unfortunately not on the bicycle, but it is walking.
He walks everywhere.
Yeah. So he's always on his feet and
right.
He's always moving. And I don't think he eats terribly.
No.
I think he's been pretty good about how he eats.
Yeah.
So he's probably on the other side of the curve on that
yeah.
one, you know, or on the top of
right.
the curve. So, but yeah, how about that?
Right.
Isn't that great? It's a good thing. So anyway, this is in the New York Times. If you want to check it out, the name of the article is How Exercise Can Keep Aging Muscles and Immune Systems Young. So it's not the fountain of youth, but it's a good step in the right direction. Moving on from that, I have the Maintenance Minute. And the Maintenance Minute today is going to be a maintenance chart, okay? So the maintenance chart is, let's see if I can find this on my list here. What you need to do is you need to take care of your bicycle. And how do you take care of your bike? Well, putting a simple bicycle maintenance chart together is a great idea. And where you can put this is you can hang this up in your workshop. If you have a workshop, maybe you have a garage, maybe you have a place where you park your bike every night, and you could just put it there. And you could have it on a calendar type of device or however you want to do it. But anyway, bike care tips, keep your bike inside, avoid storing it outside. Rain and moisture are not your friends. Bicycles ridden in the rain and or off-road typically require more frequent and extensive service, so you need to pay attention to that. Don't use WD-40 on your chain. It's made for doors and things that sometimes not that move sometimes, not bikes, which have a lot of pressure and movement. In fact, WD-40 will actually strip your chain of oil, causing metal-on-metal grinding. Rather than that, try to use a chain lube. Need a good chain lube? Go down to your local bike shop and ask them what they would recommend for the type of riding you do. So lube your bike. It likes it. And in those of us that are into the world of lubing our bikes, I tend to be a lot less paraffin-based and a lot more oil-based because it just seems to work better for me. But that's just me. So everyone has their preference. Some people like their chains to be clean and beautiful all the time. I really don't care. I really don't care. I'd rather that my chain worked. So there's every ride, okay, a safety check. You want to check the air pressure in your tires, see if they're low, inspect the frame, feel squishy, anything like that. You want to just kind of look things over, check for any fraying cables, anything like that. And then that's what you do every single ride. Monthly or every 500 miles, you want to really check the bike out much more carefully. Take a little more of an inspection look for cracks and dents on the frame. Take a look at your wheels. Make sure that they are spinning smoothly. Make sure that your tires, once again, monthly check those tires. What can happen is you can get little cracks in the tires, and so you want to check that and make sure. And the other thing is that a lot of people don't look at when they're inspecting tires is they don't look and see how many little cuts there are in the tires until one day all of a sudden they get a flat tire and they realize that there's been a piece of glass that was embedded in a cut in the tire for an extended period of time and it eventually wiggled its way through and found the tube and flattened your tire. Every 6 months or every 2,500 miles, you might want to clean your frame to protect the paint and the varnish. And once it is clean, you can inspect the bike frame and the fork for more cracks or dents, because these things do happen. Yearly or every 6,000 miles. Now, that may seem like a lot for some of you that are listening. That may seem like, well, gee, I rode my bike 12,000 miles last year. So, you know, put it into perspective as to what works for you. But anyway, every year I would not even consider it every 6,000 miles. I would consider it every year, even if you're an occasional cyclist. You want to check all the bearing systems, the hubs, the bottom bracket, the headset, and the pedals. And you want to adjust and or overhaul as needed based on their condition. Once again, I would put this on a calendar, you know, and you know, we seem to always get a lot of calendars around the first of the year, and you'll get a calendar from maybe your local insurance agent or from your doctor or from someone who will hand you a calendar. Why don't you put one in your area where you work on your bike, and then you can write in on the calendar when you replace the battery on your computer, for instance, or when you, because I actually write that down. I have a little piece of paper on the inside of the cabinet where the bike repairer is, and I write stuff down as to when I last changed a chain or last changed a cassette on.
Do you want
bike.
An actual calendar? Because we could make that happen.
We could. I mean, we have plenty of them. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of them hanging in my office. You probably have a few extras too.
Yeah.
But I just write it down on a piece of paper because that's another way of doing this, and that piece of paper is taped on the inside of the door.
Yeah.
So I know that in another 300 miles, I have to replace the chain on your bike. I'm just making that up because I don't know if that's really it. I have to look at the chart and see. But you want to do that. And my rule of thumb as far as chains go is just very simply you know, you can get probably about, this is on a multi-speed road bike, not on a mountain bike. Mountain bikes are very different because they get a lot more grit. But on a multi-speed road bike, you can usually get around 1,500 to 1,800 miles out of a chain. And I'm going to use that as a range. Some people can go as high as 2,000. Depends on the type of rider you are also. So if you're a grinder, someone who, like, you know, pushes big gears and you don't tend to spin that much and you put a lot of torque and a lot of pressure on the pedals, or if you climb a lot of hills because you're going to put torque and pressure on the pedals more on the hills, then you might want to do it more often. And if you're someone who is a spinner who spins their legs at high RPMs and doesn't put as much pressure on the pedals and as much wear on that drivetrain, then you could do it a little on the other side. But don't wait too long, because if you wait too long, the cassette, the gears in the back, will wear out, and then you put a new chain on and it's going to skip and pop and cause problems. I can usually get 3 cycles out of a chain before replacing the cassette. Some people do it differently. That's what I do. So anyway, make yourself a chart. Make yourself a chart. Pay attention to it. Take a look. See when was the last time you looked at your bike? When was the last time you checked your bike over? Hey, right now outside, it's cold. Go visit the guys at the bike shop, because they're getting really, really busy. I've been visiting them over the last couple of weeks, and they are saying things are starting to pick up. They're starting to see some action. But they said, you know, nothing like what happens on the first really, really nice day when everyone decides that they need their bike tomorrow. And you know what? That's not going to happen. So get it done now. Get it done now. Shout out to local bike shops. You know I love you. Anyway, that's my maintenance minute for today. Make a maintenance chart. Let's take a look at things, see how it all works. In racing news, Nibali, our good old Italian cyclist here, he won the San Remo. So this is the time of year for the classic races. The races this time of year are sometimes they're very long. I believe this is like a 130-mile race. It's very long. And, oh, excuse me, back. It's 185 miles of racing, okay? And Vincenzo Nibali made a daring move on the Poggio, and it was about 30 minutes to finish the race. And this is a sprinter's race, by the way. Being 185 miles, it is a sprinter's race. So it's usually like a parade. But there was a place for him to make a move, and he mounted what they call a daring raid on the Poggio. So he made the move, and off he went, and he won it. So, yay, big, bold move. And you can see, if you take a look at this, there's a picture in Velo News of Nibali throwing his arms up in the air and everyone behind him sprinting like crazy, and they didn't catch him. So anyway, sometimes you got to take a chance in life, and that's a beautiful thing right there, because it's early season, and that's not usually a race that anyone that is not a sprinter would win. So kind of cool, kind of a cool thing. It's in the news. It's a fun thing if you're into bike racing. Lots of classics. We've had a bunch of them. We've got more coming up here really, really soon. So I'm hoping to get some more action. I'm a huge fan of steephill.tv online, because you can not only watch bicycle racing, you can watch it in many languages. And it's very exciting sometimes to listen to a language that you have absolutely no idea what they're talking about, but the sportscaster is so excited, you know exactly what they're talking about. So it makes it kind of like a fun thing to check out. So anyway, that I thought that was kind of a neat thing to bring up, and keep your eyes open on the classics. The classics are fun. So this one I had set aside a long time ago, and I just finally got around to this, but there was a BMX rider. Where was this? This was kind of a crazy thing. And it was, he's kind of a local, I don't know if I want to call him a troublemaker. I want to probably call him a people's advocate that rides his BMX bike around town. And I just got to make sure I get this correct on this one. But he this was in February, on February 9th, and it was in Texas. And the Texas cop pointed a gun at an unarmed cyclist who was filming his car, prompting complaints to his department. So, you know, there's a video that goes along with it. This kid rides his bike around town. He's fairly young, late teens. He was riding, his name is Charles Dominguez, and he was riding his BMX bike around a local shopping center last Saturday when he spotted a police SUV from across the parking lot. Okay. Soon afterward, the officer stopped his car and drew on Dominguez, shouting, "Sir, if you keep following me, I'm going to take it as a threat." So the kid's riding his BMX bike with his camera on his phone, and he's just filming the police officer doing his job, which there is nothing at all illegal about. But it antagonized the police officer, and the police officer decided that instead of either calling in some backup and asking someone else to come and have a conversation with this person, or just simply getting out of his car and chatting with him about it, he decided to pull a weapon on him. Now, that's just that's, you know, the only weapon that the rider of the BMX bike had was his cell phone, and he had no other weapons. And he is described as a self-styled police watchdog. He has a history of recording local officers during traffic stops and other moments on his job. His YouTube videos make frequent allusions to the First Amendment and the right to record in public, and his confrontations with police turn hostile, though never violent, according to his upload history. Last month, he was arrested by DeSoto police for interfering with public duties as he videotaped a cop interviewing another citizen. So, obviously, he's just watching out for others, and
he's a little bit of an instigator.
Well, he's a little bit of an instigator, but he shouldn't have had a weapon pulled on him. He did not draw a weapon. He was not in any way antagonizing to the point where he was threatening the officer against his life, and he shouldn't have done it. You know,
he shouldn't have done it.
So they're basically, you know, saying that they're going to file a formal complaint and they're going to investigate it. I haven't heard anything since, but because it had to do with a bicycle and it had to do with a firearm, I thought it would be kind of an interesting thing to bring up, so I did. But moving back to the agenda here today, there's a few things going on. In 2018, we have the agenda has been announced by Bike Walk CT for the legislative priorities for 2018. So this is for Connecticut, and the 2018 legislative session has already begun, and we're excited to share our 2018 advocacy priorities with you. So I have a list here that comes from Bike Walk CT. That's bikewalkct.org, and you can check and see, and you can get a PDF download of the priorities. And number one on the list is crosswalk legislation. Current Connecticut crosswalk legislation requires motorists to yield to pedestrians in crosswalks. Prior to 2007, motorists in Connecticut were required to stop for people at crosswalks. And Bike Walk Connecticut believes this is very important to amend the crosswalk law to its pre-2007 statutory language for this victory to have meaning. However, outreach and education will be critical. So how do you feel about that? Do you feel that the drivers should just yield in crosswalks, or should they actually come to a stop? I think coming to a stop is not a bad idea. And I know this touches a sore subject with Fran, so I'll be really careful about this. But, you know, you see someone in a crosswalk, as you're approaching them, don't just slow down. Stop. Stop at the crosswalk. Let them get across and then go. You know, we're here on a large university campus, and there are crosswalks everywhere, and there are many, many, many pedestrians here. So we're always stopping at crosswalks for pedestrians. And sometimes I have to wait a couple of minutes because there's so many, because it might be when they're changing classes or whatever it is. But, you know, this is like this isn't really, this is another one of those DUH moments, I do believe, is it not? So, anyway.
Meaning that, obviously, if there are people in the crosswalk, you don't want to drive over the crosswalk.
Yeah, yeah, that would, you know, that you know, vulnerable objects like, vulnerable users like bicycles and pedestrians, that's what we are actually termed as, by the way, in driver's manuals and such. Yeah, we're a little soft. We're a little soft and squishy. So we don't really need you to drive your behemoth over us. Thank you very much. Okay.
Right.
And just pay attention. Pay attention. And whatever you do, don't get a self-driving car yet. Please, please don't do that. But so anyway, legislative priorities, e-bike legislation. This is another one, which is kind of interesting. Actually, I missed one here. Trail bond funding. In January of 2016, the Bond Commission allocated $7 million to build, expand, or enhance recreational trails. Yay, recreational trails. We like those. After the recent protracted budget deliberations, funding for additional grants no longer exists, although a placeholder does. If restored, this bonding would be the only source of funding available in 2018 in Connecticut that could be feasible, that including feasibility and design. So Bike Walk Connecticut will work with Connecticut Parks and Forest and Parks Association, East Coast Greenway, Farmington Valley Trails Council, and others to restore bonding for the Connecticut Recreational Trails Program. So that's a good thing. Third on their list is e-bike legislation. Connecticut lacks legislation specifically classifying or regulating e-bikes, i.e. bicycles with electric motors. This leads to gray areas and confusion. The Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Board recommends a legislative fix that is based on a decade of research, mirrors that of other states, and permits local regulation of e-bike use on trails. So they're going to work with the Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Board to advance e-bike legislation. And then fourth on their list is the Bike Walk Connecticut is eager to support our partners on additional advocacy efforts. Topics may include or coordinating on safety and educational campaigns, speed limit policy changes, and complete streets advocacy, to name a few. So anyway, that's what's going on with Bike Walk Connecticut right now. I also got a notice from the other Tony, Tony C. I have Tony B and I have Tony C. So this is from Tony C.
Soon we'll have a Tony D and EFG, HIJ, K, LMNOP.
Oh, my God. Where are you going with that? I don't even want to know.
All the way to Z.
All the way to Z. Yeah. Well, that's very, very nice. So anyway, Tony sends me. this is amusing. Tony sends me a piece here on multimodal transit activity, ACT transportation legislation priorities for 2018. This is out of Hartford. Easy to difficult, crosswalk wording, safety improvement, modification of Connecticut crosswalk legislation. This is also going along with Bike Walk Connecticut. The e-bike legislation is also here. We need to, this defines a little bit more of the speed limit situation here. Municipal control for design and posted speed limit to reduce fatalities. Policy is dominated by the 85th percentile approach, which that prioritizes speed of motor vehicles over safety. Legislative action to limit the OSTA oversight to state routes in municipalities with a staff traffic engineer. So they're recommending increased focus on safety and street speed policy and speed design and posted speed limits. That just these things need to be controlled. I think what the problem is, and I'm gonna just kind of throw this out there, as our cars become quieter and quieter, if you're sitting in a newer automobile, motorized vehicle, car, truck, whatever, they're far quieter than they were 25, 30 years ago. And I think it really takes you away from the experience of driving the car and understanding your surroundings. So there's kind of a gray line here as far as that goes. And of course, when you do that, you also don't pay really, really close attention to those vulnerable users out there. The example is Hartford has the lowest traffic violation ticketing rate in the Metro Hartford region. Correspondingly, it has the highest crash rates for all road users, cars, pedestrians, and bicycles. So, you know, things like this need to be attended to. If you're going to drive your car, and you're going to drive your car in a busy urban environment, and you have lots of pedestrians, and you have lots of other cars, slow down. Just slow down. It's okay. You'll get there. You really will. Give yourself a little extra time. That might work well for you, too. So there's a red light and speed camera legislation to improve public safety. Connecticut experienced 23% increase in road fatalities from 2014 to 2016. Ouch, that's not good. A smart application of camera-based traffic enforcement would improve safety for all road users. Adopt a robust, safety-focused legislation from another state that has successfully implemented camera-based traffic enforcement. So you can search that online, too, if you want to know more about that. Another thing, endorsement of increased gas taxes and highway tolls. This is for Connecticut. I'm a big believer in this. I know that it's a very controversial point, and the argument always comes back to the people who are unable to afford the tolls. So now we're talking about drivers of cars and trucks that don't have enough money to add yet another restriction onto their driving activity. Instead of catering to those people, maybe we should be catering a little bit more to the vulnerable users that have found a different way to transport themselves, be it mass transportation, be it a bicycle, be it walking, and make it safer for them, so therefore more people would do that, and then they wouldn't need to be on the highways with the tolls. And I know that it's not perfect. It's not a perfect world out there. But giving the penalty to those who are not driving cars and then trying to avoid the penalty to those that are driving cars and trucks is just backwards. You got it wrong. So, you know, do I want to see tolls on my highways personally? No. Do I want to see it as far as a big picture project? Absolutely. Now, why? Because what it is going to do is it is going to help eventually wean people off of using their cars for unnecessary trips and also for, you know, trips in general. You're going to think about it a lot more carefully. Think about when we had gas tax, not gas tax, when we had gas shortages or we had major spikes in gasoline. The consumers that were driving automobiles, and albeit, you know, people had to get to work, they got to get there, they got to figure out a way to do it. The driving decreased, the amount of consumed fuel decreased by over 20% when that happened. So what people started doing, instead of driving their car to work and driving their car home and then going back out to go to the grocery store and then coming back home, they started thinking a lot more conservatively about how they were going to consume the fuel so that they could be more efficient with their travel. So, you know, so if you have increase of gas taxes and highway tolls and that money then gets used to go back and help rebuild the infrastructure as it should be. I know it doesn't always go there, and I am looking at a perfect world here, not the one that we currently live in, and sometimes these funds can be put in the wrong direction, but why don't we use it only for building infrastructure and complete streets and maintenance of our transit system? And, you know, prioritizing inexpensive highway travel and sprawl over transit-oriented development, it's stifling our economy. It's not good. So there's a lot of good arguments for putting tolls back out there. Plus the fact that here in the state of Connecticut, we live in what is sometimes known as the gateway to New England. In order to get from Metro New York or any other place in the United States and get into New England, there are only a few avenues that are open in which to bring you through. You can come through Connecticut, you can come through Massachusetts, and you can come through Vermont. Those are the three bordering states to the west as we know it. And in order to do that, Massachusetts has tolls. Vermont does not, but Vermont has everything that no one else has, or they have nothing that everyone else has. That's just kind of a Vermont thing. I think it's part of being a Vermonter, but which has some a certain amount of attraction to it. And I know why people live up there, and I know why they think the way they think. But anyway, Massachusetts definitely has a toll system on their major highway, which is Interstate 90, which comes in from Albany. And they also they have those tolls all the way into Boston. So the further and deeper you get into going into Boston and heading all the way out to the farthest east points of Massachusetts, the more you pay. Vermont doesn't, like I said, have it at this time, but I know there's discussion. New Hampshire has tolls. You can't go into their state or out of their state without tolls. Maine has tolls. You can't go in and out of their state without tolls. Connecticut and Rhode Island do not at this time. And Rhode Island's kind of a little corner state, and there's probably less reason for them to do it than there is for Connecticut. But, geez, you know, Connecticut, I mean, you got to come through here anyway. Why don't we collect on some of that? And let's put it back into our infrastructure. So these are things that need to be addressed. I think it's a priority. Tony sent this out. I looked it over. It all makes a lot of sense. So there's some good things that need to get changed in our legislation this year. And there's a lot of research on it. And highway tolls, 3 to 5 years to implement. Near-term increase gas tax of 4 to 9 cents a gallon is needed due to hybrid and electric adaptation. That's another thing that we don't consider. With all these more fuel-efficient vehicles, there's less gas tax collected at the pump because people are, you know, they're driving more efficient vehicles, which is all a very good thing, and it is all good for our environment. I'm not saying there's anything against that, but maybe it's time to take another look at this. Let's take a really serious look at, and it's not on this list here that came out, let's take a really serious look at the larger the vehicle, the bigger the taxes on the vehicle, because they have so much more
impact
on our environment in so many ways. They're heavy.
Yes.
When my little VW wagon hits a pothole, the pothole gets a little bigger. And those of you who are not in our part of the country and don't understand what a pothole is, a pothole is where the road starts to crumble because of bad winters, and we have a lot of them out there right now.
I noticed that in Florida. Now that I think about it, when I was writing,
there's no potholes.
No potholes.
Right.
Potholes
are a result of cold weather and frost heaves and all these different things that no one understands.
Yes.
Unless you live in the cold climates like we do, and then you know what they are. So what happens is a pothole will be a crumbling of the road surface under a certain place for whatever reason it may be. Maybe it's a frost heave or whatever. And then you hit it enough with the vehicle, and eventually it starts crumbling a little more, and then a hole is created because moisture gets in there and fills up, and then you add that moisture to it and keep hitting the hole. The hole gets bigger and bigger and bigger. My little car, which is still a large enough size car to have some weight to it, creates a lot less impact than the TLV that's out there, and it weighs 6,000 to 8,000 pounds. And is carrying probably not more than one or two people in it. And it's just they have more impact on our roads. That impact on our roads costs us money. It costs us tax money. And quite honestly, it makes it really lousy for cyclists, because we have to now watch out for potholes, which can do a serious amount of damage to our bicycles and to our physical being. Because if you have been out there and you've ever hit a pothole on your bicycle with your front wheel first, you have then experienced the, wow, I'm looking up at the sky now, before ka-thump, on the ground you go. So that is one problem. If you hit it with the rear wheel, there's a very serious chance that you'll probably destroy the rear wheel on your bicycle, because we're a lot more fragile. Our bicycles are a lot more fragile. So
Anyway, once again, let's put some money into fixing the infrastructure here, and let's tax the heavy vehicles. Let's let people understand that there's responsibility that goes along with driving a very large vehicle, and it's not for everyone. Think twice. I think my rant actually last week was about buying a responsible vehicle, but if you are having to buy a motorized vehicle or a gasoline powered vehicle or whatever, buy a responsible one. That's all. So we're I'm looking at a lot of different things out there, I find that there's some other points that I wanted to bring up today. And so we hit this one. There's, speaking of infrastructure, there's something that's called Tiger, which, let me see if I get this one right. I got to make sure I find exactly what it is. But it's Trump administration's announcement of the Tiger Grant Awards, and it looks worse than the earlier announcements as suggested. The Trump administration selections are skewed heavily towards highways and bridges. Yo, Mr. Trump, I know you don't know what it's like to ride a bike. Mm-hmm. And I know
that's obvious.
I know that you probably will never have any interest in riding a bike. And I know that most of your family members will probably never, ever ride a bike.
And probably
a lot of your friends will probably never ride a bike. But hey, we're out there. Okay, so if you're talking about seriously doing something about our infrastructure, we're here. We're here. We're waiting for you. We would like some money tossed in our direction. So if most of these grants are going to go to highways, I mean, I think it's very, very outstanding that you want to rebuild the infrastructure of this company. The president before you.
Or wanted, country.
What's that?
Or country.
That's what I said, in country, right?
No.
Oh, okay. So anyway, the president before you wanted to rebuild the infrastructure of this country. The president before that probably wanted to rebuild the infrastructure of that country.
The president before that was an avid cyclist.
And the president before that was an avid, and still is an avid cyclist, by the way. George still rides his bike. Mm. He still loves to ride his bike. George likes bikes. He's a good guy, as far as that goes. So I said it. I said it. I kept the disclaimer out there. So anyway, infrastructure enhancement goes for all vehicular and transportation travel, okay? That includes the vulnerable users. That's us. We're out there, you know, the soft, squishy people. We are definitely out there. And we would like you to put at least some sort of a percentage marker on the alternative use. I hate to call it alternative because for some people it's not an alternative. It is their number one use of transportation. But having released this information and finding out that most of it is towards highways is a little concerning to me. 3.8% of the funds will support transit projects, and another 18% will go towards walking and biking improvements, while nearly 60% will go towards highways, bridges. So I don't know where to start here, but, you know, it would be really, really nice if we could get a lot more of that money pointed in our direction. If you drive a large TLV and you are upset with the fact that we may be, quote unquote, in your way when you're out driving your TLV down the road and we're on your road and your taxpayer roads, maybe you might want to consider making our roads a little safer and giving us a little more room on our roads so we don't appear to be in your way so much. I'm not a huge believer in bike lanes per se that are separated from the roads completely because it sends the wrong message. I would rather that our roads are more adequately marked with the idea that we have pedestrians and bicyclists on them than to keep us completely out of sight and out of mind, because I think out of sight, out of mind creates worse driving habits. So anyway, so Trump administration, they're going to rebuild. They're going to do all sorts of good things. Well, let's really do it, okay? Let's go there. Let's go there and do this. I would really like to see that happen. Let's see. So I've been reading a lot about bicycle helmets lately because there's some controversy about helmets, and it especially becomes controversial when you get over to places like England and other parts of Europe, and you know, where bicycle helmets are kind of looked at as a sort of a ha-ha thing. Oh, that's what the Americans wear.
And it's a place where they have controversy.
And they have controversy over there, yes. That's funny. That's a funny way to say that word.
That's all British people.
All British people say
controversy.
The same
people that say apricots and basil.
Right, because it was John, what's his name, says that.
Trevor Noah.
Trevor Noah says it also.
Yes.
But
John Oliver.
John Oliver also says it.
Yes.
He says
controversy.
Controversy.
An advertisement.
So here, what is the controversy of this particular situation? Well, here it is. Now, in no way, just so you know, will I ever put my foot on the pedal of a bicycle without having a helmet on my head. I've seen enough. I've been there enough. I feel that it's necessary. I also, you know, probably need to inspect my helmet because it's probably near its 5-year end. And I believe that the helmet is definitely something that works for me because of the people that I ride my bicycles with, being the automobiles and others that are out here, which don't seem to have as much regard for cyclists as maybe other parts of the world. But here is the argument, okay? And here's where the controversy comes in on this one. And that is that the push for putting helmets on riders in the United States and putting helmets on riders in other parts of the world leads to less people riding bicycles because it creates kind of like what the weather forecasters do here when they completely blow it like they've done it once again here. They create a misrepresentation of what's going on and what I like to call a fear factor. And that fear factor is... it scares people away from riding their bikes because they think it's going to get hurt. So they don't ride their bikes. So that's where the controversy is. In other parts of the world, the more people that ride bikes, the less helmets you see. So what's the deal here? Let's think about this. There are some great articles out there. There's the unintended consequences of bicycle helmets on a website called cardiobrief.org. So there's also was an op-ed in MedPage Today, which was the unintended consequences of bicycle helmets. There's definitely some things to take a look at, and I'm gonna put this out there because and I have to be quick because we're getting really close to the end here, but I take a look at traffic fatalities over the years, and I'm going all the way back to 1921. All the way up through 2014 is what my chart has here. But I know in 2015 we had a big spike, and the motor vehicle deaths increased by 8%. Close to 40,000 people, 38,300 people were killed on U.S. roads. The cars since when our biggest spike was, which is 69, 71, 72, There was pretty high. We were up to like 50,000 deaths on the highway with motorized vehicles. And now we're down to 40,000. So it has decreased to a certain extent, but not dramatically, not really, really dramatically. And I guess the point I'm trying to make here is that we put helmets on people and it's not, we're scaring people off of bicycles. We're making our cars safer and safer and safer. And people are feeling safer in their cars, but they're really not. So there's my point. My point is that they're really not safer. Even though they would assume that they're safer, they're not, because drivers don't drive their cars safely. And that's really where the bottom line is here, which brings me all the way back to where we started this whole conversation here in the beginning with driverless cars. And that will bring me up to an ending point for the show. I want you to all think about that. I'd love to hear your comments on it.
please comment to me at the appropriate places. I'll give you the readout here in just a moment. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about what is going on? We got a couple of upcoming events here. The UConn cycling team is having a race this weekend right here in Mansfield. There will be a time trial on Chaffeyville Road and Codfish Falls Road. Keep your eyes open, please, for people on bicycles. Also, another race is going to happen between the middle school and community center. So it's in the Stores area. So keep your eyes open this weekend, please. There is a bicycle race out there. Good luck to the UConn cycling team for everything they've done. There's also a bikewalkct.org has a summit on Friday, April 6th, 2018 from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can check on their website for that. New England Bike Walk Summit, April 26th and 27th through the 27th in Boston. You can check at 10times.com/NEBWS on that one. National Bike to Work Week is May 14th through the 18th. Bike to Work Day is May 18th. Put it on your calendar. The Seven Lakes Ride is coming up on Sunday, June 24th. That's from our good friends at NERAC Earth. We will probably have them on the air for that. And on July 28th, the Thread City Cyclers are having their annual Thread City Century Ride from Garrison Park in Chaplin, Connecticut. Those are my upcoming events. There is obviously a lot more. If you'd like that anything listed, just send it over to me. I'd love to discuss it. My name is Pedalin' Ron. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. You can call, well, you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. And you can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you'd like to contribute to or be on the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS. Stores.